Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, as much as conservatives were kind of looking forward potentially to a Hillary Clinton-Elizabeth Warren showdown for the Democratic nomination, we can now rest easy that Elizabeth Warren will not actually ever be president of the United States, at least not starting in 2017. It appears that the message has even dawned on the people who launched the draft Elizabeth Warren for president movement. They're folding up shop. The MSNBC story says 6 months after launching a high-profile attempt to push Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren into the 2016 presidential race, the campaign to draft Warren is calling it quits, according to officials with the two groups that founded the effort. Democracy for America and MoveOn.org started their Run Warren Run campaign. The two major liberal groups are now suspending their efforts. But Jim, they're still calling it a win because her ideas are driving the Democratic debate. But good news, Elizabeth Warren's not running. We'll take that.
I suppose we should give them a little bit of credit for recognizing the obvious. We're going to look back and think of Elizabeth Warren as a fascinating case of a lack of ambition. In that, look, she's clearly got a big chunk of the base clamoring for her. There are a lot of Democrats who are really not that thrilled with Hillary Clinton. She's old news. She's been in the national spotlight for 25 years. She's cozy with Wall Street. There are a whole bunch of reasons that your average diehard liberal progressive just doesn't get the pulse quickening when it comes to Hillary Clinton. And that somebody like Elizabeth Warren, whose whole mantra is the game is rigged, who basically is focused entirely upon this concept that the American economy somehow got taken over by evil, powerful, rich people, and that that's why we're having problems in our economy. It's nothing to do with our tax rates, nothing to do with our regulatory states, nothing to do with energy prices, nothing to do with our education system. No, no, no. It's all evil, rich people on Wall Street. And that is what liberals want to hear much more. They kind of recognize, obviously, that Hillary Clinton is not an ideal messenger for that message. Now, if she genuinely comes out someday and says, you know what, I'm just not running for president sometime in the next couple of weeks, I almost would want to shake Elizabeth Warren's hand, not just because I don't agree with her and I don't want to see her president. I kind of – if Dave Weigel had said something a couple of weeks ago where he said, does Elizabeth Warren really seem like somebody who wants to spend 8 years – 4 to 8 years of her life in National Security Council meetings? And I think what he meant by that was that, look, she is somebody who's always had a passion – getting those darn rich people, and that's driven her political career. And she hasn't had an enormous interest in the other aspects of statecraft that a president has to do. She's never been a foreign policy national security wonk. Well, a big part of the job of being president is dealing with foreign policy and national security, although you're forgiven for thinking you don't really have to pay that much attention to it after watching this presidency. Ultimately, because she hasn't taken any steps for Iran, Elizabeth Warren has looked at it and decided she doesn't want to be president. And people say, well, maybe she doesn't like that. Well, she's getting up there in years. So, and she's probably not likely to have a better scenario to run for president than she will in 2016. So if Elizabeth Warren really has looked at her life, looked at her career, looked at what she wants to do in politics and in government and public life, and decided that she doesn't want to have to be president of the United States to do it, atta girl, Elizabeth Warren. Let's hear it for people who don't need to be president in order to make the difference that they want to, and for having maybe a clearer view of what the job of the presidency is than thinking, oh, I'll finally get to enact all of my pet issues.
Hillary Clinton's breathing a sigh of relief. They had a meeting, I believe, late last year, shortly after Warren did her "I'm threatening to filibuster the Cromnibus, but it won't be my fault." Remember that whole scenario?
That's right, yes.
They had a meeting, and I just wonder what happened there, because it seemed like she was setting the table for potentially gumming up the works for Hillary this year, but then it suddenly all didn't happen. But anyway,
Elizabeth, don't make me hurt you. This will hurt me more than it will hurt. No, actually, it's going to hurt you more. It's going to hurt you a lot more, but I'll do it. Get out of my way, girl.
For a small donation to the Clinton Foundation, I can make this all
there
the way.
There you go. Yeah. Think of it as insurance.
All right. Out of the bad martini now. And this is from the New York Times. With only 1 month left before a deadline to complete a nuclear deal with Iran, international inspectors have reported that Tehran's stockpile of nuclear fuel increased about 20% over the last 18 months of negotiations, partially undercutting the Obama administration's contention that the Iranian program had been frozen during that period. Classic New York Times follow-up paragraph, but Western officials and experts cannot quite figure out why. One possibility is that Iran has run into technical problems that have kept it from converting some of its enriched uranium into fuel rods for reactors, which would make the material essentially unusable for weapons. Another is that it is increasing its stockpile to give it an edge if the negotiations fail. Jim, I think you and I can probably figure out why they haven't stopped.
I don't know if they kind of covered in that second one, but just spitballing here, throwing it out there. What if they're cheating, okay? What if we can't trust them? What if the people who like to blow stuff up, including Jewish community centers in Argentina, on the other side of the world, or U.S. barracks in Saudi Arabia, what if these guys are willing to lie, not just kill people? The entire philosophy of these negotiations is, yes, the Iranians have a long and distinguished history of killing innocent people, but they're honest killers. And, you know, people like you and I just aren't quite willing to give them that benefit of the doubt.
I think it is really that simple. And now that John Kerry's out of the picture for probably a couple of weeks here with these negotiations, although he can always join by Skype or whatever, you got to hope that maybe this will throw a monkey wrench into the works. But this administration seems so desperate to get it done, you almost think that even this won't faze them.
Yeah, I mean, I understand he might be on the physically unable to perform list. If he goes on injured reserve, he's out for the rest of the negotiating season. Unfortunate for John Kerry, but ultimately, this is being driven by the top. It's not like we have a really skeptical deputy secretary of state who's ready to step in and totally change our negotiating position. And remember, Greg, Marie Harf is stepping into this, right?
Yes.
While there's always the odds, you know, a possibility that she'll harf it up. That's a new term, by the way. When you completely bobble things and make no sense and cannot justify your – it's to harp. It's now a verb. Ultimately, this is being driven by President Obama's desire for a deal. And the only things that possibly could screw this up are if the Iranians decide we don't want a deal, right? That ultimately they've decided that any deal is too much of would constitute too much of a restriction on their ability to advance their nuclear program. And the French are talking tough. And the French sound like they're not buying into any regime, any deal that doesn't include inspections of military sites, because you kind of figure the military sites are where they'd want to develop nuclear weapons. And so maybe the French, if they reject it, they'll get the rest of Europe to go along and we'll end up with something that's just untenable. But things like this New York Times story should make Americans say, whoa, all right, we're not doing a deal with these guys. They're cheating. And obviously it's not. And there's no indication that it will.
You're so untrusting.
Yes, exactly. I have trust issues, Greg.
All right. On to the crazy martini. Now, speaking of trust, since 9/11 or shortly thereafter, we have trusted the Transportation Security Administration to keep us safe in the air. And it turns out they're doing a really, really lousy job of it. Even though they've exposed us to radiation and groped us at the airport repeatedly, this is what we've learned. This is the CNN report from the Department of Homeland Security's own investigation.
TSA officers failed 95% of the time during undercover operations designed to test their ability to detect explosives and weapons at airport security checkpoints. Teams with the Department of Homeland Security Inspector General's office posed as passengers and attempted to pass through airport checkpoints with mock explosives and weapons. A government official with knowledge of the results say TSA failed 67 out of 70 tests.
But we got three right, Jim.
Yeah. This is kind of a triple infuriating. The fact that they're bad doesn't stun us. The fact that they're this bad is kind of shocking. Actually, I've had to kind of luck the last couple of times, and I have a few flights coming up, so maybe I shouldn't speak too critically of TSA, lest my next agent who handles me, and by the way, I mean really handles me, end up hearing this. So ultimately, look, we've all probably had some bad run-in experience, somebody who either dealt with us kind of unprofessionally or was brusque or condescending or rude or something like that. And that kind of makes us grind our teeth. But all right, well, they got a job to do. They're doing the best they can. Well, one, I have a very hard time believing you're doing the best you can when you have a 95% failure rate. Like that's bad. Even, Greg, by the standards of government work, that's a really bad failure rate.
Yes.
Failure rate. The second thing is there are certain places where incompetence in government, you can kind of roll your eyes and just kind of say, well, I guess it's just the way things are. Paperwork, slow processing of grants. We've long since gotten used to the Obama administration utterly ignoring FOIA requests or taking forever to respond to them. Recently, Greg, I got a response from some federal agency telling me they had not found anything for my FOIA request. but they were still looking and to let me know if I was still interested. I could not remember what I'd asked them for. It was something like maybe 2008, 2009. It was years and years ago. I'm pretty sure the deadline for that piece passed. And just kind of this sense that, like, you know, you're used to it. But TSA, you'd like, because the consequences can be life and death, you'd like them to be a little more on the ball on this sort of thing. And then finally, the last reason, I saw this, Greg, there were like five flights that had to be either delayed or canceled because of phoned-in bomb threats. And you may remember I had about 10 flights, I think it was over Memorial Day weekend or a little bit before then, where you had the same kind of case. So somebody's messing around with airlines and phoning in bomb threats and things like that. So far, it hasn't been anything. We had some flight come in and over from Europe that we had to have escorted by jets because somebody had said there was something dangerous on it. So at the exact moment we can tell somebody's up to no good and trying to mess with our airplanes, we find out that TSA is just utterly incompetent at the one job it has, which is finding bad stuff that people are trying to sneak onto airplanes.
Yeah, other than that, we're doing great. So
there we go. Other than that, yeah. But the uniforms look snazzy.
Yeah, they do. Rest easy and travel easy, America. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.